156, Section 2, The Road to Independence. As you read, look for events leading up to the break with Great Britain, Georgia's role in the growing tensions, the battles that started the Revolutionary War, the Declaration of Independence, terms, intolerable acts, provincial Congress, Council of Safety, Loyalist, Patriot, Declaration of Independence. The early 1770s were calmer after the repeal of the Townshend Revenue Act. British leaders and many colonists hoped that they could work out better relations. Most colonists were not yet thinking of independence. They simply wanted the British to return to the policies of the period before the French and Indian War. The repeal of the Townshend Revenue Act seemed a step in that direction. Some colonists, such as Samuel Adams of Boston, tried to keep the spirit of resistance alive, but many settled back into their lives. The British, however, set off another firestorm of protest with a new law in 1773. After that, events led, one after another, toward the final break. The colonists became more and more connected to each other in their opposition. As they did, the power of the royal governments in the colonies declined. The Tea Act and the Boston Tea Party. In 1773, Great Britain passed the Tea Act. This law made Britain's East India Company the only company that could sell imported tea in the colonies. In other words, the company had a monopoly on tea. The company, which had been one of Great Britain's most successful, had lost a great deal of revenue because of the tea boycott during the protest over the Townshend Act. Parliament was trying to keep the company from going bankrupt, collapsing. The tax the company had to pay on cargo leaving England was removed, so the company could lower the price of the tea. The company hoped the cheap tea would encourage the colonists to buy, but the tax still had to be paid on the tea when it came into the colonies. Many colonists saw this act as a trick to get them to pay the tax. In some colonies, New York, for example, the tea ships were sent back to Great Britain in protest. In South Carolina, the tea was confiscated and later sold to help the revolutionary cause. The most famous protest was the Boston Tea Party. In that incident, colonists disguised as Indians boarded the tea ships in the harbor and dumped the tea into the water. No tea ships came to Georgia, so Georgia had no tea party. The Intolerable Acts. British King George III was outraged at what he and Parliament saw as a criminal action, destroying the East India Company's property. He believed that the colonies had to be brought under control. As a result, Parliament enacted a series of laws to punish Boston and the Massachusetts colony. They were trying to make an example of what the government would do to colonies who participated in illegal behavior. The Coercive Acts, as the British called them, closed Boston's port to all ships going and coming until the colonists paid for the tea. One law limited Massachusetts government. Town meetings could not be held unless the royal governor approved. British officials accused of crimes were to be tried in Great Britain. Colonists had to quarter, house and feed British soldiers, even in their own homes. These laws became known in the colonies as the Intolerable Acts. Georgians were upset by the Intolerable Acts, even though they were aimed at the Massachusetts colony and not Georgia. In August 1774, representatives from all Georgia's parishes met in Savannah, although most came from the Midway area of St. John's Parish and from Christ Church Parish. Those at the meeting agreed to a series of resolutions, statements, explaining their disagreement with what Great Britain had done and stating what they wanted the government to do. They believed that Parliament was taking away their rights as British citizens. Like the other colonies, Georgia thought that only the colonial Commons House, where citizens were actually represented, should tax them. Continental Congresses. In spite of Georgia's opposition to British policy, Georgia chose not to send any delegates to a meeting in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That meeting came to be called the First Continental Congress. Georgians did decide to have another meeting called the Provincial Congress in Savannah in January 1775 at the same time that the Commons House was scheduled to meet. In September 1774, the First Continental Congress had called for the colonies to join together to boycott all British goods. This strategy, called a non-importation agreement, had worked in the protest over the Townshend Act. To organize the boycott, the Continental Congress founded the Continental Association. In December 1774, the settlers in St. John's Parish agreed to accept the boycott, and early in January 1775, the people of Darien in St. Andrew's Parish did also. Other parts of the colony took no action. Georgia's Commons House met in session on January 17, 1775. The next day, the Provincial Congress met with only 5 of the 12 parishes represented. Representatives from St. John's Parish were not there because they were upset that most of the other parishes had not adopted the Continental Association boycott. The Provincial Congress voted to send delegates to the Second Continental Congress that was scheduled to meet in Philadelphia in May 1775. The 3 men elected, Archibald Bullock, Noble Wimberly Jones, and John Houston, were all from the Savannah area in Christ Church Parish. Since the Provincial Congress had no real power to do this, they hoped the Commons House, as the legally elected representatives of the people, would approve of what they had done. Governor Wright was dismayed by what was happening. He thought that the official royal government was losing control. He came personally to the Commons House and asked the delegates to keep the rule of law. Governor Wright genuinely loved Georgia and believed the British government had been good for the colony, helping it to become stronger and more prosperous. He was afraid that rebellion would bring Georgia distress and ruin. He said that passing measures opposed to the British government might have terrible consequences. When he thought the Commons House was going to take up the ideas of the Provincial Congress, he sent the delegates home before they could vote. As a result, Georgia was the only one of the 13 colonies that had no delegates at the start of the Second Continental Congress. Meanwhile, St. John's Parish thought both the Provincial Congress and the Commons House were being too weak. Many of the colonists of St. John's Parish were of Puritan New England heritage, so they thought more like the people in Massachusetts did. They even talked about seceding from Georgia and joining South Carolina. The residents of St. John's Parish had their own meeting and elected Dr. Lyman Hall to represent them at the Second Continental Congress. Because he did not officially represent the colony of Georgia, however, he would not be able to vote. Born in Connecticut, Dr. Hall had moved to Georgia in 1757 and became a major leader during the Revolutionary period. When he left for the Second Continental Congress, he took rice and money to help the people of Massachusetts who were struggling after the port of Boston had been closed by the Intolerable Acts. A royal government in trouble. For the rest of the spring of 1775, events in Georgia led to a growing breakdown of the royal government, especially the power of Governor Wright. He found that his letters to Great Britain were being opened in Charlestown, South Carolina. Fake letters with his name forged on them were instead being sent to his superiors in London. When Wright asked the Commons House to meet in May, it ignored him. His ability to control the colony was lost. On May 10, 1775, Georgians read in the Georgia Gazette that American colonists and British soldiers had fought each other in April in what came to be known as the Battles of Lexington and Concord. American writer and poet Ralph Waldo Emerson would later say the rebelling Massachusetts farmers had fired the shot heard round the world. In Massachusetts, the situation had become increasingly tense. In the early spring of 1775, the British general stationed in Boston, Thomas Gage, had received orders to arrest the ringleaders of the Sons of Liberty, including Samuel Adams, who had led the Boston Tea Party, and John Hancock. Gage also knew that the Sons of Liberty were storing weapons and ammunition in the villages outside Boston. He determined to take these military supplies. But some colonists learned of Gage's plan, and three men rode through the countryside at night, warning the colonists that the British soldiers were coming. One of those riders became very famous, silversmith Paul Revere. When the king's soldiers marched to the village of Lexington on April 19th, they were met by armed Americans called Minutemen. Someone fired, and a skirmish occurred that left Americans dead and wounded. Both sides claimed the other had fired that first shot. The British soldiers marched on toward Concord, where Americans fired on them from the Old North Bridge. As the soldiers marched back toward Boston, the Minutemen fired at them all along the way, killing and wounding many British troops. This news electrified the Sons of Liberty in Georgia. Noble Wimberly Jones called for a meeting at his house the next night. After the meeting, he, Joseph Habersham, Edward Telfair, Joseph Clay, John Millage, Mordecai Sheftall, and others broke into the Royal Magazine, the storage house for gunpowder, and stole about 600 pounds of gunpowder. It would later be used as ammunition in the Revolution. Although South Carolinians had already raided their own magazine, this was a bold action for the Georgia Sons of Liberty. Other acts against the king and the royal government followed. On June 2, 1775, the cannons on the Savannah River were rolled down the bluff in an attempt to disable them. The Sons of Liberty did not want them to be fired in a salute to the king's birthday on June 4th. Governor Wright had them brought back up and fired the ones that would still operate. On June 5th, a large mob of Savannahians marched to the governor's house and put up a Liberty pole with a flag on top. The governor was powerless to stop this demonstration and other acts of defiance. With the royal government not functioning well, law and order needed to be maintained. So the rebels set up local committees for that purpose and called for a new provincial Congress to meet on July 4th. An overall Council of Safety was set up to oversee the local committees and basically take on the powers of the governor and his council. Among other tasks, the local committees of safety, as they were called, tried to enforce the boycott of British goods, sometimes in violent ways. Life became more difficult for those who did not agree with the actions of the Liberty Boys. In Savannah, a sailor named John Hopkins was taken from his home, tarred, feathered, and paraded through the streets. In Augusta, a recent British settler named Thomas Brown was treated even more severely. When he refused to swear an oath to the boycott, he was stabbed, hit over the head, tarred, feathered, and burned on the soles of his feet. Incredibly, he survived all of this. He became an ardent supporter of the king. The Second Provincial Congress met on July 4, 1775, at Tondee's Tavern in Savannah. Some of the men elected as delegates were not from wealthy or well-born families. Governor Wright was surprised at the idea of artisans and other ordinary men being involved in governing. During the meeting, the Provincial Congress passed many resolutions on the rights of the colonists and asked the king to remove his soldiers from the colonies. They also elected 5 men to the Second Continental Congress being held in Philadelphia: the Reverend John Zubley, Archibald Bullock, Noble Wimberly Jones, Lyman Hall, and John Houston. Georgia would now be participating fully with the 12 other colonies. On July 10, 1775, the British ship Philippa sailed into the Savannah River. Joseph Habersham, son of merchant and council member James Habersham, had outfitted a ship he named the Liberty. Sailing out to the British ship in his ship, he forced the British captain to Cockspur, an island in the Savannah River. There, Habersham and the Sons of Liberty unloaded the ship's cargo of gunpowder and bullets. Governor Wright could do nothing to protect the Philippa. Some of this powder was later given to the Indians to try to keep them friendly to the colonists. Rebellion and Independence. By late 1775, Georgia was heading toward full rebellion. Georgia citizens, however, were not united in their stand. In the back country of St. Paul's Parish, many citizens at first remained loyal to the British government. They had suffered raids by Indians who were upset that settlers were moving into their lands. Many of the settlers had fled their new homes. Others had fortified their homes or built separate forts that they could flee to in case of Indian attack. These settlers had thought they needed the protection of the British. When the king sent no soldiers, in spite of Governor Wright's repeated request, they became upset by the government's unwillingness to protect them. Some began to change their loyalty. Some Georgians, including some who had disapproved of the British policies, did not believe in outright defiance of the government and its laws. One such person was Presbyterian minister John J. Zubley. The Reverend Zubley had attended meetings protesting British actions and had even been chosen as one of the delegates to the Second Continental Congress. But full defiance to the point of independence went too far for Zubley and others. Members of the Governor's Council felt the same way. These citizens remained loyal to Great Britain and King George, so they were called Loyalists. Sometimes they were called Tories, the name of the political party in Great Britain that supported the king and his policies. The Loyalists included many of the government officials, the Anglican ministers, the Indian traders, and some of the planters and farmers who thought that they were doing well under British rule. Some of the wealthy and many of the older citizens who had lived through the positive changes that had happened since the trustee period also remained loyal to Great Britain. Those who defied the government called themselves patriots. They believed that the changes in the British policies since the French and Indian War were taking away rights that had been guaranteed them as British citizens. These people were also known as Whigs, the name of the political party in Great Britain that sometimes opposed the king and his policies. The Patriots included many of the Scots in St. Andrew's Parish, the Congregationalists of St. John's Parish, many of the craftsmen and artisans in Savannah, many small farmers, and some planters. By the end of 1775, enough Georgians had become patriots that the colony joined the other 12 colonies, which had been more defiant for a long time. Why had Georgia been slower to active rebellion than its sister colonies? For one thing, Georgia was younger. Other young mainland British colonies, such as East and West Florida, did not join the rebellion. Many of Georgia's older citizens had come directly from Great Britain and still had close ties to the mother country. In most other colonies, a majority of the citizens had been born in the colonies, so their direct ties to the mother country were further in the past. This had the unfortunate effect in Georgia of fathers supporting the British as loyalists and sons becoming patriots. Noble Jones and Noble Wimberly Jones and James Habersham and his 3 sons, James Jr., John, and Joseph, are examples. A second reason that had initially made many colonists reluctant to defy the mother country was that Georgia had so many exposed frontiers that could be attacked by Indians. The British government had maintained mostly friendly relations with the Indians through regulation of the Indian trade and through a policy of providing gifts or presents to the Indians on a regular basis. In case those relationships became less friendly, as they did after the Indians reluctantly gave up the new lands in 1773, the colonists thought that Great Britain would send soldiers for their defense. Only when they did not get that protection did many frontier settlers cast their lot with the rebels. Finally, most Georgians genuinely liked their royal governor, James Wright. His capable leadership had helped the colony grow in population and had brought more stability and more prosperity. In fact, James Wright may have been too good a governor. If Georgia had not prospered under his care, the colony might not have been strong enough to revolt. By the end of 1775, Wright knew that his power was waning. He pleaded desperately with the British to send troops to Georgia, believing that Georgia was still young enough and weak enough that the resistance could be subdued. What he did not know was that within 3 months, he and his family would be forced to sail away from their Georgia home. He had helped his colony mature enough to join its older sister colonies and leave its mother. The Declaration of Independence. Following the battles of Lexington and Concord, the Second Continental Congress met in Philadelphia. One of its early actions was to approve a Continental Army of 20,000 men with George Washington as its commander. The Congress sent a declaration to King George III explaining why the colonists had taken up arms. Following that, they drew up a petition asking the king to reconsider his policies so peace could be made. This was known as the Olive Branch Petition because an olive branch has long been a symbol of making peace. But events made peace less likely. The king not only rejected the olive branch, but he also sent another 20,000 troops to the colonies to end what he considered a rebellion. He declared all who participated in activities against the government to be traitors. In January 1776, a patriot named Thomas Paine published a pamphlet called Common Sense, arguing for a path of independence. He said that an independent America could begin the world over again. That was the debate that kept the Continental Congress busy during that spring of 1776. On June 7, 1776, Richard Henry Lee of Virginia introduced a resolution for independence. The Congress appointed a committee, including Thomas Jefferson of Virginia, John Adams of Massachusetts, and Benjamin Franklin, to write a declaration that would explain to the world and to their fellow colonists why they were justified in separating from their mother country. Many of the words had appeared in other declarations and writings in the colonies, but this document was a good summary of the delegates' philosophy and thinking. In the declaration, the colonists were no longer talking about just their rights as British citizens, but about natural rights that came from the Creator, not the King. On July 2nd, the Continental Congress voted for independence. After 2 more days of revising the document, the Declaration of Independence went to the printer on July 4th, 1776. The colonies considered themselves free and independent states, united in a common cause. They would have to fight a war to make it so. 3 Georgians were there to sign the document: Dr. Lyman Hall, George Walton, and Button Gwinnett. With the other signers, they pledged their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor. Reviewing the section. 1. Define loyalist, patriot. 2. Why did Parliament enact the Intolerable Acts? How did they affect Georgia? 3. Why was Georgia at first reluctant to join the other colonies in rebellion? Page 266, Discovering Georgia's Past. Georgia's Signers. Three men signed the Declaration of Independence as Georgia's representatives to the Second Continental Congress: Button Gwinnett, Lyman Hall, and George Walton. None of these men were native Georgians. Gwinnett was born in England and arrived in Georgia in 1765 when he was 30 years old. He failed in a career as a merchant and as a planter, but his political career fared better. Hall was born in Connecticut, graduated from Yale, and lived in South Carolina before settling in Midway, Georgia, in 1760 at the age of 36 to practice medicine. Born in Virginia, Walton moved to Savannah in 1769 when he was about 20 to become a practicing attorney. All three men became active in the revolutionary movement. Walton was initially part of the Patriot faction in Christ Church Parish, while Gwinnett and Hall were part of a more radical faction. The three also quickly became active in Georgia politics. Gwinnett began his service in the Commons House of Assembly in 1769. When the war began, he was chosen by the Georgia Provincial Congress as commander of the Georgia Continental Battalion. Conservative patriots opposed his selection, and he stepped aside to accept an appointment to the Second Continental Congress in Philadelphia. Hall was first chosen to go to the Continental Congress by St. John's Parish. He could not vote, however, since he did not represent the entire colony. When Georgia did choose representatives to the Second Continental Congress, Hall was one of the men chosen. Walton was first elected to the Provincial Congress. In 1775, he became president of the Georgia Council of Safety. Then, in 1776, he too became a member of the Second Continental Congress. All three were present in Philadelphia to vote for and sign the Declaration of Independence. Unfortunately, Button Gwinnett died in 1777 following a duel with Lachlan McIntosh. Hall served as Georgia governor in 1783 and helped found the University of Georgia. Walton had a successful career after the war as a governor, Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court, and United States Senator. Gwinnett, Hall, and Walton counties are named in honor of these famous Georgians. Page 268, Chapter Review. Chapter Summary, Section 1, British Policies at the War's End. After the French and Indian War, Parliament enacted a new colonial policy, in part to help pay for the cost of the war. The Navigation Acts regulated the products the colonies could sell and how those products could be shipped. Smuggling developed as a way to avoid paying British taxes. The Proclamation of 1763 forbade settlement west of the Appalachian Mountains. Georgia was not directly affected, although it benefited from settlers moving to the colony to claim land. The Sugar Act of 1764 placed a tax on molasses. The Stamp Act of 1765 required that stamps be placed on all printed materials and documents. Georgia was the only colony that actually sold the stamps. The Townsend Revenue Act placed taxes on many goods coming into the colony. In 1770, all the taxes except the one on tea were repealed. Section 2, The Road to Independence. The 1773 Tea Act gave Britain's East India Company a monopoly on the sale of tea in the colonies. One famous protest against the law was the Boston Tea Party. Parliament passed the Coercive or Intolerable Acts to punish the Massachusetts colony for the Boston Tea Party. Royal Governor Wright often dissolved the Commons House of Assembly when it appeared to take actions that were against the British government. The first shots of the Revolutionary War were fired in Lexington and Concord, Massachusetts. A Council of Safety was established to oversee the local committees of safety. the Provincial Congress named Reverend John Zubley, Archibald Bullock, Noble Wimberly Jones, Lyman Hall, and John Houston as Georgia's representatives to the Second Continental Congress. Those who favored independence from Great Britain were known as Patriots or Whigs. Those who wished to remain British subjects were known as Loyalists or Tories. Georgia was slow to join the other colonies in rebelling against the mother country. The Second Continental Congress voted to separate the colonies from Great Britain. It issued the Declaration of Independence in July 1776. The three Georgians who signed the document were Dr. Lyman Hall, George Walton, and Button Gwinnett. Pages 268 and 269 contain a chapter review of Chapter 11.